this is Cătălin Câmpanu. Welcome to another sponsored interview on the Risky Business News podcast. Today, our guest is George Glass, Senior Vice President for Kroll's Cyber Risk Business. Welcome, George.
Hi, how are you?
George, this month, your team at Kroll published a report on some new North Korean malware. Could you tell us more on what you found?
Yeah, certainly. We were responding to a number of incidents regarding the vulnerabilities in Screen Connect developed by ConnectWise. During some of those incident response investigations, we saw the presence of a piece of malware that looked particularly interesting. I think that really kind of fell out from the fact that it was doing stuff that we kind of understood, but in a way that we hadn't really seen before. And upon further inspection and comparing it to what others in the industry had seen in previous years, we came to the conclusion that the code base and the actions that the malware took was very, very similar to that of Baby Shark, which has been attributed by others to the Kim Suki APT group.
The report mentioned that those particular intrusions were leveraging ConnectWise Screen Connect devices for initial access. North Korean hackers are typically known for phishing and supply chain operations. Do they often go after enterprise gear with one day exploits like this? Is this a lesser known side of their operations?
Yeah, I think in particular that this Kim Suki group are particularly known for, as you say, that their phishing operations, particularly to conduct espionage as their actions on objective. This particular set of vulnerabilities, I should say, there's two of them, really can lead to mass exploitation. Now, we stopped the malware from running and deploying its second stage payload during some of these investigations. So we don't know what the last actions on objective are in this particular case. But what we do assess is that they were exploiting this as a one-day vulnerability to quickly gain a lot of access so that could persist after people had patched the vulnerability and then assess what sort of environment they had infected and then come back later. So while we don't know their full actions and the reason for running these campaigns, we can be fairly certain that should the Toddler Shark Stealer and Loader report back an interesting target to this particular group, they likely would have deployed a second stage payload, which in this particular case we didn't see.
What are the main lessons you want people to take from this report? For example, if they read it, what would be, let's say, the main defensive measure they could take, or anything else that you wanted to relay across?
Sure. I think one of the things that worked so well in our response to a lot of these one-day vulnerabilities is a defense in-depth strategy, especially for zero-day, one-day vulnerabilities, and you know, depending on the piece of technology that may be targeted, building detection for that particular exploit exploited in, you know, any number of different ways can be very, very challenging, even for very advanced security operations functions. What worked really well here is we had a robust set of detections that detects suspicious and strange activity. And, you know, that led to catching and stopping this particular piece of malware. And that's thanks to, EDR and next generation AV sort of stepping in, stopping stuff, allowing isolation robust detection rules lit up when this thing was running on the machine. Although the particular endpoint that the actor used for initial access may not have been, you know, enrolled in an EDR technology, the workstations behind it that the threat actor is using to pivot on, they were protected. And so the intrusion was discovered and quickly remediated that way. So I think if there's one thing, that defense in-depth strategy really shined through this time.
So multiple layers of detection and watching for various layers of traffic activity at the customer's level, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Endpoint, network, logs going into SIEM, all of that is incredibly powerful and allows for, you know, a more robust detection response scenario. So yeah, absolutely. I'd recommend all of those things.
George, it's also quite painfully obvious by now that both APT and ransomware groups are primarily going after enterprise gear sitting on the network edges or used for remote access. As a risk advisory company, what do you usually tell customers about this type of equipment? Is this a point of emphasis during risk assessment?
Certainly, yes. There are certain types of technology which inherently carry risk simply by operating them, right? I mean, that is something that you just have to accept as part of normal business operations. You are going to have to expose something to the internet to allow remote access to your environment, so on and so forth. Now, there are obviously many, many ways of mitigating some of those risks. And, you know, we could talk about that and until the cows come home. But really, the main thing is understanding the business risk that you're presenting by allowing these particular tools to be accessible directly over the internet. A lot of the time when we see, especially one-day vulnerabilities being exploited, it's sort of a mass exploitation across the internet. Is there anything that looks like this particular piece of technology? Run the exploit against it, install some kind of persistence mechanism, some kind of backdoor, and then come back later. Now, the fact that that can be achieved by even low-skilled attackers in itself presents even more risk, right? But I think the differentiator between less technically adept threat actors and some more advanced ransomware gangs like Plop, for example, and advanced persistent threat actors is they also have the possibility of developing those zero-day exploits, which you know, obviously have no mitigations at the time of exploitation. So understanding the risk of that sort of profile means understanding what you're presenting to the internet, and then being well prepared and well rehearsed in rapidly deploying patches, threat hunting, and conducting DFIR exercises should zero-day vulnerabilities be exploited on those devices.
George, you mentioned earlier about technologies that inherently carry risk. Is there any type of equipment, customer behavior, network topology that you consider to be just as risky or even more risky than, let's say, enterprise gear?
I'll give you my best consultant answer there. And I'd say that really does depend. It depends on the threat model of the environment that each particular organization or business may be operating in, what kind of stack that they're willing to run against the cost, right? All of those sort of decisions are very much, you know, business decisions, just as they are for security decisions. And so, yeah, one organization may be able to pay for all the Gucci kit and all the gear, whereas another may need to get by with stuff that maybe carries a bit more risk, a little bit enterprise grade, but also, you know, it could be the fact that I hate to use the term security by obscurity, but it could be that the fact that, you know, they're using some sort of open source tool that isn't quite on threat actors' radars at that given time, you know. All of those things are very dependent on the situation and the organization, I'd say.
From what you're saying, or at least that's what I'm interpreting, is it? Their risk goes considerably down if they are willing to invest in defending their network, right?
I think so, yes.
So even if your network is full of high-risk enterprise gear, if you're willing to protect it, you're probably going to be safer than someone running fewer high-risk equipment but is not willing to put any kind of defense in front of it?
I think that's pretty much what it comes down to. It's understanding what you're running, understanding the risk of running that particular piece of gear, and being ready and responsible for, you know, that risk associated with each of those pieces of technology. And of course, as with all things, there's going to be a trade-off somewhere. And I think in many cases, it's, you know, buy some more monitoring equipment, hire good people to protect it. That's certainly the philosophy that I'd follow.
From what you just said, I just realized that I was focusing more on the gear side of things in cyber risk assessment, not necessarily on the human factor. What I actually want to ask is, how willing are companies to invest in good security personnel? You, as a VP, you've probably dealt with many of your customers. Did you usually get responses, let's buy more stuff instead of let's hire more talented people?
Well, I think a lot of the people that come to us are looking for more of a holistic solution to security operations, right? So we do run an MDR business, and in so doing, you know, we can offer the type of equipment that we think is going to be best to defend a network, and really, really smart people. And so when people come to us, that's usually the type of service that they're looking for, if I'm being perfectly honest.
Okay, that makes sense. If you're offering the product as well.
Yes, yeah.
George, that's a perfect way to end it. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.